Welcome back to the Kojo Namdi Show here on WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey, the local host of Morning Edition here on WAMU, sitting in today for Kojo. Fast, casual restaurants where you can grab a quick lunch for $10 or less line the streets of Washington. So what makes one stand out? Ahmad Ashkar thinks he has an idea. He's the CEO and founder of the Holt Prize Foundation and recently opened his restaurant, Falafel Inc., in the Georgetown neighborhood of Washington. He joins me now. Good afternoon, and thanks for being here.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, Falafel Inc., is Falafel Incorporated or Falafel Inc.?
Falafel Inc. is incorporated, but right now it's just Falafel Inc., and the brand has really taken off. It's a name we came up with on the fly, and it's stuck.
Well, it opened about a week and a half ago. In addition to serving food, the restaurant has the mission of helping and supporting refugees. How?
So, growing up as a Palestinian in the United States, getting good falafel and hummus has always been something that's really close and dear to my heart. Fortunately, we didn't have an opportunity to do that on the regular basis. With the refugee crisis, we thought of a way to sell falafel sandwiches, give proceeds away to the World Food Program, and through our partnership there, feed refugees, and at the same time, employ and empower refugees to actually work inside of our restaurants.
So are you employing refugees now?
We are. We have one refugee employed, and we're actually working on a growth strategy plan that will allow us to employ up to 100 refugees here in the D.C. metro area within the next 12 to 18 months.
So Falafel Inc., a for-profit business, but doing social or working towards social advancement as well. Now, you've been involved in social entrepreneurship before Falafel Inc. opened. Tell us what the Holt Prize is and why and how you created it.
Yeah, so I've spent the last 10 years of my life building a platform for young people to pursue impact. And by doing that, we don't differentiate between doing good and making money. We figured out a way to create and launch startups that have a social mission but are profitable. So essentially, by earning a dollar of revenue, you're able to sustain impact. And we think that's the platform of the future. And the Holt Prize, it's the largest startup program in the world that empowers and funds early stage startups that kind of have this social mission, but for good, for profit in the world. And we're in over 1,000 universities and 100 countries around the world.
Yeah, the Huffington Post has called it the Nobel Prize for students.
Yeah, it's been quite an honor to build such a platform. And, you know, a decade ago, the conversations were all about how do we make charities sustainable? Where the Holt Prize took it was to say, how do we get business people to use capitalism with a cause and create businesses that are the future of social, instead of thinking about sustainable, how do we make them profitable and get an entire generation thinking about, you know, not just the next Uber, the next Tesla, but how do we create the next, you know, kind of Falafel Inc. that by earning revenue can have, you know, infinite social impact around the world.
Are you a social entrepreneur? Tell us about your business. You can call into the program, 800-433-8850. You can also email us, kojo@wamu.org, or tweet at Kojo Show. Before we go further, how do you define social entrepreneurship?
Sure. It's pretty simple for us. I mean, we see thousands of startups every year, and we've created a methodology. We say you have to have three key criteria. One is your business has to be impact-centered. Every decision you make has to result in net impact. Two, you have to be profit-minded. You've got to have an innate business model, which is built into your business so that just by existing, you have a net impact on society. And three, you have to be market-driven. There's no sense in creating products or services that don't necessarily capture an audience or solve a mega problem. And with those three criteria together, we feel you have the basis of a social enterprise.
Now, you've been involved in many startup projects, whether seeing them through the Holt Prize and awarding that award or being involved with them yourself, many in the tech world. Why did you decide to enter the restaurant space?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, the restaurant business is interesting for me. I mean, frankly, it was a fluke. My wife was in Georgetown and noticed a local restaurant that was going out of business. And it's been a kind of a dream of ours, you know, in the world as an Arab, American, Palestinian. When you make it, you do probably one of two things. You buy a gas station or you open a restaurant, and that's kind of in our blood. You know, we've got a lot of culture and food, but in all reality, there's far and few businesses that have an opportunity to touch as many different people. And I believe the common equalizer in the geopolitical climate that we live in and the challenges around social issues and political issues, food and business are two ultimate equalizers. So we put those together by providing a great product of authentic hummus, authentic falafel, things that are really been inspired by Palestinian street food around the world. And we wanted to bring some of that authenticity back to the Northern Virginia and D.C. metro area.
Well, you mentioned you're Palestinian-American, and in fact, the falafel shop, as I understand, serves your mother's recipes.
It does. You know, we actually grew up in Kansas City, so we're somewhat of a hybrid. You know, my parents immigrated to the United States, East Coast first, and landed up in the Midwest. And growing up in Kansas City, there wasn't a whole lot of, this is in the 80s, 90s, there wasn't a whole lot of Middle Eastern or Palestinian falafel or hummus shops. So we grew up, my mom literally used to make us falafel, hummus, bake her own bread at home. And we also spent 3 or 4 months a year in Palestine. So we developed that palate for such a great product, an authentic product. And those people who come into our shop who have had the authentic product either in Israel, Palestine, Jordan, or somewhere else in the Middle East, you know, they always have longed for this authentic product to be available in the U.S., and we're happy to provide that product here in the Washington, D.C. area.
Well, is that personal family history part of why you wanted to focus with this new restaurant endeavor on helping refugees?
Yeah, absolutely. As a Palestinian, I don't know a single Palestinian in America that doesn't have a cousin or family member or friend who's a refugee. It's an issue that is near and dear to our heart. I mean, we're one of the largest refugee populations in the world, and creating a business which can sustain the welfare and restore dignity to refugees is something that hits home with me personally. And on top of that, our whole price challenge, as selected by President Bill Clinton this year, was on refugees. So we challenge young people around the world to create startups that restored the rights and dignity to 10 million refugees. As a leader of the organization, what better way is there for me to lead than actually creating an enterprise that my friends joke about that's good enough to win the whole prize itself?
Yeah. Well, if the mission of helping refugees is important to you, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I'd like to delve into it a little further. Why not start a nonprofit? Why is the for-profit model a better way, or at least a different way, to achieve results?
Yeah, so there's three real reasons that the for-profit way is the way of the future. Number one is the missions of traditional nonprofits. Again, let's exclude those that focus on disaster or emergency type of work. Nonprofit is needed for them. But if you want to talk about real impact and sustainable impact, you're talking about creating products and services that sustain themselves. That's the first reason. The second is the buying behaviors and patterns of millennials. Over the next 50 to 75 years, you're going to see about $60 trillion of wealth transferred to the millennial generation. These consumers demand impact. So you have an opportunity to design products and services which cut across kind of being just a charity or just a business. The future of business is charity, where they're one and the same. And the third reason is you're starting to see valuations, corporations like Unilever, IKEA, et cetera, actually get higher market cap valuations by having social missions built in. So if we're going to solve some of these tough trillion-dollar problems around the world, we need the world's very best young, brilliant, innovative minds thinking about those challenges. And frankly speaking, I can't convince them to come into the nonprofit space. So we need those brilliant minds to be motivated by capitalism, but have capitalism with a cause. And that's why we think social entrepreneurship and impact is the way forward.
You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey. In today for Kojo, and we're speaking with Ahmad Ashkar, CEO and founder of the Holt Prize Foundation. And he also recently opened a restaurant, Falafel Inc., in Georgetown here in Washington. I want to ask you, given the current political climate and the sort of high-profile issue these days around immigration and refugees, do you see that as a challenge right now or as an opportunity for your business?
Yeah, most people think of it as a challenge, but we think it's one of the – it's a renaissance of entrepreneurship. If you think about refugees – first of all, not all refugees are Muslim. And I think, you know, there's been a big stigma to say that, you know, refugees are going to increase the issues that we see in some of the security issues we have as a nation here in America. The reality is refugees add economic output to communities. Egypt just published a study, said their refugee intake from Syria has increased $800 million of GDP to the economy. And somebody who's hiring employees, if I look to hire somebody who's just swam across the ocean to survive, or hire somebody who's kind of had a free ride getting their education paid for, et cetera, you know, which one of those employees would you rather hire? So we've created a system that not only creates an opportunity for refugees, but but frankly speaking, for business owners itself. Now, the Washington, D.C. community, probably the best community in America. We could have opened this first flagship store because we've received nothing but support, both from the community, as well as some of the businesses in town, as well as some of the religious institutions. We're working with churches, working with mosques, we're working with synagogues to help place refugees that have an opportunity to both contribute to society and the economy here locally.
So a very positive reception so far here in the immediate Washington area.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of, you know, our mission is twofold. It's to feed refugees, but it's also to provide kind of a sense of dignity, to restore that opportunity of being a part of the economy for refugees themselves.
Are you more likely to eat at a restaurant that supports a social cause? Why or why not? Tell us. Call 800-433-8850. You can also email kojo@wamu.org or tweet at Kojo Show. Let's go to the phones now. Barry calling from Ashburn, Virginia. Barry, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. My question is, in setting up an operation that is going to have a function or a mission that is not just to make money but also to do good, do you have to put something in the corporate papers that indicate that? Or, I mean, most often I hear people saying, well, my corporation, you know, won't do that because their first object is to make money for the shareholders. And if they did something that wasn't aimed at making money for the shareholders, they'd get people objecting to it.
Ahmad Ashkar.
Barry, that's such a great question. And obviously, the first kind of job of an executive and a board is to maximize shareholder value. That's why a corporation exists. You have a couple of options when setting up a social enterprise or a for-good enterprise. LLC is a traditional setup of, you know, your traditional for-profit. But as long as your bylaws dictate this kind of impact-first mission, you make sure that you're organized in a way that promotes the equality between profit motive and impact motive. There's also some innovative structures like 501c3 corporations or traditional nonprofit, and there's a hybrids between 501c3 and LLC corporations that can be set up. And there's lots of new and innovative things like B Corps. But I think if your governing body and your bylaws can dictate that you're putting impact first and profit motive not going to be sacrificed for the purpose of impact and vice versa, you'll be okay. But, you know, where we're going is more important than where we are. In the next decade, what you'll see is this line, this blurry line, be erased, where maximizing shareholder value actually is based on what I call the social innovation premium. And we've got a book being released in September on that. And that basically tells us that if you're a traditional shareholder, we know we're in a marketplace where the millennial generation is going to control a lot of the wealth, the disposable income, and that income is going to go towards companies which have social missions built in. So in the future, hopefully we won't have to have these conversations, but for the current time, there's a number of various legal structures that you can play out.
Well, thanks for your call, Barry. Are there other local restaurants that follow the social entrepreneurship model in place?
You know, look, I think there's a handful. DC's got a few. Most of them are charities with business kind of add-ons. And what we're trying to promote here is not a sustainable way to run a soup kitchen. This is, the Panera Bread is a great example. They've opened some stores, but it's more, they've opened some stores which allow you to just go in and not pay and, you know, giving people, restoring the dignity of homeless people and hungry people to go kind of get a meal. But what you don't have is this idea of designing for impact. How do you create businesses that just by simply existing can have a net impact on society? There are a number that will donate to great causes, or they'll take some of the top line revenue and they'll donate it. But talking about being fully integrated in this idea of social impact and the impact enterprise, far and few between. And I'm sure Falafel Inc. is probably the first one, at least in falafel, that's doing it on a national basis.
Well, how did you pick your location in Georgetown?
Again, it was totally random. My wife, Tanya, was walking down in Georgetown, and we took over a very famous, I should say infamous, Middle Eastern restaurant called Quick Pita. And that's actually how a lot of our clients knew who we were. And, you know, one of the Quick Pita customers has been going there for 20 years. He said, I thought I was going to hate you when I walked in because Quick Pita is no longer here. But now I guess I have to love you, and your food's so darn good that, we don't really have a choice. But, Georgetown is always, for me, a place where I'd love to launch a brand. I think any brand out there would love an opportunity to start. We're located right across the street from Georgetown Cupcakes' original location, and a lot of the neighbors are coming up to us and saying, you know, you guys might be the next Georgetown Cupcake. So that's really exciting. And as we talk to partners and investors and potential people who are going to operate future stores, you know, it's exciting to tell them we're in Georgetown. We've got a location in the nation's capital.
How do you measure success when you're looking at your business, both looking at terms of succeeding locally as a restaurant, but then also in terms of what you're doing to help refugees?
Yeah, that's a great question. Success is measured in a number of different ways, but the beautiful thing is when you design your company correctly, we measure success as meeting a minimum number of meals we can provide to refugees. So on a daily basis, if we're able to provide 150 meals, then we know we've had a successful day. And whatever the math works out to, we basically are saying, look, our break-even is not the revenue we're generating. Our break-even point in operating the business is the number of actually people in need we're able to feed.
And there are many fast casual restaurants, of course, in D.C. where you can get lunch for $10 or less. Some also source their ingredients locally. How do you set your restaurant apart when you're just starting?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's kind of three, and again, we've come to know the food business now, inside and outside. But in general, in business and startups, you've got three key criteria. Number one is your core offering. What are you offering? Your second is your price point. And third is your value proposition. For us, we feel like we've nailed the trifecta because our offering is a nearly completely vegan product, 100% vegetarian. There's no meat in the store. All but two products are completely vegan. Our falafel balls, gluten-free. Our price points, our sandwiches are $3. And part of why they're so cheap is it has to do with our value proposition. They're cheap because we can actually turn a profit for that price. But our value proposition is to aid and restore dignity to refugees. We're able to do that by saying to our customers, we're cheap because people in the refugee camps are eating falafel, not because they have a choice, but because it's the cheapest food available for them. And the second is obviously the ability to tie in the social impact with the actual offering itself.
When someone walks through the door of your restaurant, how front and center is the mission as opposed to the menu?
Yeah, the mission actually sits and it's integrated. And again, as we talk about the business of the future, the social mission has to be integrated into the offering. Can't be an afterthought. And the way we do that at Falafel Inc. is a couple ways. Number one, our staff. Our staff is continuously saying the message, reiterating why we're doing what we're doing. Not one customer comes through the restaurant without understanding what our mission is. And definitely, we don't have it in your face on the menu, but it is on the menu. And we've got a lot of little nooks and crannies with the design. A2 Design Build, Atif Sharif, a local architect, was instrumental in designing our restaurant to actually look like a refugee camp. So if you come in, we use materials like OSB on the walls, very simple light fixtures with just bulbs, and the design and the decor of the actual restaurant looks like a refugee camp. So you can't help but ask and be aware that, you know, you're in a different place, and it's about asking the right questions as a consumer to be able to kind of recognize our impact to refugees.
And we're almost out of time, but you are looking to expand the number of refugees who are working in your restaurant, also looking to expand the business elsewhere around the country in just a couple of seconds.
Yeah, so our whole model is from refugee to franchisee. We're going to empower refugees to work in our stores and then actually run them themselves. We're planning locations in Boston, Palo Alto. We're looking at one in Dubai, Rio de Janeiro, and I'm working with a great group of investors and a great group of friends who are all committed to this social mission of getting refugees, being able to restore the rights and dignity to refugees around the world.
Ahmad Oshkar, he's CEO and founder of the Holt Prize Foundation. He also recently opened a restaurant, Falafel Inc., in the Georgetown neighborhood of Washington. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
And that's it for the show today. There's always more, though, waiting for you at the Kojo Show website. That's at kojoshow.org. I'm Matt McCleskey, local host of Morning Edition here on WAMU, sitting in today for Kojo. Thanks so much for listening.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schroepsdorf, Ruth Tam, Avery Kleiman, and Taria Rogers. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Cliff Gallagher has been on the phones. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.